You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best, you can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
When your team eventually reaches the promised land, the pinnacle of your sport, then it's that much sweeter if you've had to suffer for it. Think about the great stories in sports. The Cubs.
The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout.
The Cavaliers.
And the impossible has come true.
How about Clemson knocking off Alabama?
Touchdown! With a second love.
We've had so many cool stories in the past 2 years in sports. Expect that your history will be redeemed.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Sitting in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name.
Hall of Fame? Well, on the horizon, Hall of Fame weekend for the pro football world, which means the Hall of Fame game that takes place now on a Thursday. It's a Thursday night prime time because we're such shills for football in this country. We'll even watch the very first preseason game in prime time, though it will have to compete against the Olympics. And even though it's tape delayed, which means you'll find out the results ahead of time, and no doubt it'll be all over the internet and social media. Thursday night is the women's all-around competition in gymnastics. So if you don't watch it live during the day, well, then your opportunity to watch it will come during prime time. It's called Paris in Prime Time on NBC, and Mike Tirico does a great job. So that will go up against the preseason game that will take place. So yeah, it's kind of a big week for both the Olympics as well as for the NFL as they get back to their preseason football. And goodness, August 1st. Are you kidding me? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're hoping to connect with Christopher Clary very soon here on the Infinity Sports Network as he is covering tennis and the Olympic Games in Paris. And he's always been great when we've had him overseas. So at some point this hour, we will connect with him. But you can find me online at A-Law Radio as well as on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Without a doubt, my favorite moments of Monday at the Olympic Games, and I know the U.S. women, they crushed Japan and used their size and their strength inside, but without a doubt, the U.S. men's gymnastics team, so even as Simone Biles and the women are the superstars, they attract so much of the attention. The men ended a 16-year drought and were able to win bronze in the team competition, and it was glorious. Their crazy celebrations, their routines, and get to know the name Steven Nedorosic. He is the Carrie Strug of men's gymnastics in 2024. All right, we're excited to welcome Christopher Clary, who is in Paris there to cover the Olympic tennis. But I know, Christopher, you told me in the past that you love Paris. So how is it so far as a host site for the Olympics?
Hey, I'm a little bit biased, Amy. Good to hear your voice.
You too.
My wife is French. My kids are French American, so I'm kind of, I can't be an objective observer here. You know, I'm kind of got a little bit of some skin in the game. But no, it's, you know, the Paris vibe has really gotten good. I mean, it's was a tough, rainy start, as I'm sure a lot of you saw. You know, with the kind of the rainy opening ceremony and the tough weather, but I thought it was still pretty phenomenal attempt to knock it out of the park, and I think in some ways they did. And so I think the vibe has been building in Paris since then. A lot of the streets in the city are quiet outside
really?
Of the venues. You know, it's funny, you walk around, a lot of people from Paris have left. Some people were worried about, you know, just the problems of logistics during the Olympics, and people generally in Paris tend to go away in late July and August anyway. It gets pretty quiet in a lot of neighborhoods, but when you get near the venues, I'm telling you, the atmosphere is amazing. There's been a huge amount of enthusiasm, a lot of people coming across the border from within Europe to come watch the games, a lot of orange shirts from Dutch fans and different sports that I've seen. So I think as long as nothing, you know, unfortunately, you never know with an Olympics, as long as there's no major news event, like something, a terrorist attack, heaven forbid, but as long as that doesn't happen, I think this is going to be a big success, and you can really feel a lot of positive energy around the city and the event.
So I know you're there to cover tennis, but I have to ask, because I heard this as a report, that a lot of places where you look in Paris, there are signs or photos, maybe even life-size, of Léon Marchand, the swimmer, that he's a big star. And the atmosphere was incredible. Have you seen signs of him or his face anywhere?
You know, I mean, there's just wall-to-wall coverage in all the French media. And, and you know, the French are hard to please. But when it comes to, you know, cheering for their teams, once they get into it, then they really kind of abandon all that cynicism and they let it go. And then he's definitely one of the main people in the spotlight here. And there's a lot of focus, this being France, because they really are very good at some sports that in the U.S. are not that big. A lot of focus on stuff like judo or team handball or fencing, which is an amazing venue in the Grand Palais, which is this massive exposition building, which is so grand in the middle of Paris near the Champs-Élysées. I mean, this fencing, team handball, and judo in the U.S. would not, you know, get much coverage. But here in France, it's part of the mainstream coverage, and that's part of the joy of the Olympics, Amy, I think, is to see in these different countries, you know, what gets the focus.
I will tell you this, I've never seen a beach volleyball venue and a backdrop quite like the one they have, which is pretty incredible. If you know nothing about volleyball, but you see the Eiffel Tower rising up behind the sand, that in and of itself is a draw.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best venue at the Paris Olympics is probably about 12 time zones away. It's in Tahiti, if you're looking at some of the pictures of the surfing down there. But that's a tough commute from here. Definitely hard to get there on the metro. So we're going to stick with what we got. And that's the thing about Paris. If everything goes smoothly, the venues are unbeatable. As just the I'm sure you're seeing on TV with the visuals. But even live, I mean, you show up and I lived in Paris a lot of my adult life, and you drive in these places that are always pretty epic. Down to see the Eiffel Tower, but suddenly there's a beach volleyball court, like you say, spotlit, and people are going to Versailles and seeing the horse jumping and the horse cross country events. I mean, it's a great use of this beautiful city, and I wish them well. I hope it goes well for them. You just never know. The security is incredibly tight. A huge amount of force being deployed here, but it's always risky.
Christopher Clary is joining us from Paris, where it's just past 11 o'clock in the morning. He's the founder of Tennis and Beyond, Substack, but longtime tennis insider and reporter. He's got a couple of books as well, and so we're always excited to have him here on the show. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So we get Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal in the Olympics, although a very familiar venue there at Roland Garros. How did that compare to maybe some of the other matches where you've covered them in Grand Slams?
That's a great question, I was curious because I wasn't. They played once before in the Olympics in Beijing when Nadal got the gold medal in singles back in 2008. But Djokovic wasn't Djokovic then. Rafa beat him in three sets, and that was their only previous Olympic match that they played. They haven't played much in Davis Cups. Almost all their matches have been individual sort of events like Grand Slams or regular ATP events. So this was a different venue, and I thought the. You could tell from the way they were approaching it, there was just huge hype, and it's a different community. You know, the Grand Slam tennis has its fans, people follow it. Once you get to the finals, there's more global interest. But this is interesting because this whole community of Olympic sports, within that community, the tennis players are superstars. They go around the village, and people like Djokovic and Nadal or Andy Murray are getting stopped all the time for selfies, and there's just a huge amount of interest in them. So in a way, you know, you could argue whether Olympic tennis really should even exist, considering there's other sports that maybe deserve more spotlight, and they don't have the same summit points that tennis has. But honestly, it feels pretty important once you see it here in this venue, and it does a lot for the sport. So this event with Djokovic and Nadal, and there's a big, big press area, Amy, up in the Roland Garros Stadium, which we all sat in many times, literally could not get in half an hour before the match started. It was completely packed. All people coming from all over the Olympics, you know, a lot of other athletes, other federation officials, a lot of media that don't usually cover tennis were just jammed into this big, big press box. And I think it's because they knew it could be the last time. People knew no Nadal, no Djokovic. They wanted to see Nadal on clay if they never had. They have it on their checklist. And honestly, you know, it wasn't a great match by their standards. Djokovic really dominated. Rafa made it interesting in the second set. It was it could have been, you know, almost embarrassing for him. It was 6-1, 4-love, two breaks for Djokovic. But then Nadal sort of saved the day a little bit for himself and fought back. But ultimately, it was really a pretty lopsided match by their standards, 6-1, 6-4 in about an hour and a half. But I'm not sure anybody was complaining. They were just happy to check that list and see those guys play.
And Nadal's not done. How cool is it to see he and Carlos Alcaraz competing in doubles?
Yeah, that's the other thing, Amy. You know, tennis doubles tends to be kind of back burner at almost every other event. But the Olympics, because, you know, gold medal's a gold medal.
Yes.
And the stars play. It's almost the same thing as the singles in terms of the interest. So they're playing on the, when they played on the Chatrier court, the main court with Nadal and Alcaraz, if you want to call it that, the other night. I mean, it's 15,000 people. It was completely packed. It felt like it was a gold medal match, just huge atmosphere. So that's a lot of fun to see doubles, which is a really undervalued thing in my view in tennis, get its moment in the sunshine or the rain under the roof, whatever it's going to be. But and they're playing again tonight. And the other thing is they also have Andy Murray's potentially last match is tonight.
Right.
They're playing back-to-back doubles on the second court at the at Roland Garros. Andy Murray with Dan Evans. I was on court a couple of days ago when Andy was playing what looked like his last match. He was had five match points against them in the last third set tiebreaker, and I was taking pictures on my phone of Andy's last point, but he kept making me delete him because, you know, he was five in a row. They say five match points, five career points in a row, and they live this to play another day. So they'll all be out there, not playing each other, but they're going to be out there today on the Longland court.
That atmosphere for Andy Murray and his roars, it was just unadulterated joy as they, as you talk about, they erased all those match points against the Japanese team and were able to stay alive. I mean, it seemed like, just watching it on TV, that the atmosphere was incredible. I can imagine it was awesome to be there.
You know, it's funny because most of the main court matches have been completely packed. That was the end of the day, so it's probably a half full. But it was a bunch of Brits, so the Brits were just lighting it up and waving the Union Jack or, you know, waving their Scottish flags, too, and shouting out. And, it, you know, and honestly, I think Andy was just kind of lit from within. And so was Dan Evans, his partner. I think they hugged far too many times, but they hugged a lot. And it was great to see. And it was loud, despite being half full. And tonight will not be half full.
So I know that Andy Murray is done after this. He said that unequivocally. But Rafa seems to hedge a little bit. What's your sense after hearing from him post-match about his tennis future?
Yeah, great point, Amy. He's been kind of doing serial hedging for the last couple of months. he was they gave him a farewell ceremony in Madrid. He's Spanish, obviously. He likes Madrid as a concept, but doesn't like playing tennis there because of the altitude and just a bunch of different things. So he said goodbye there, definitively. And then he went to Rome, and then he refused the idea of the ceremony, you know, the farewell thing. I go, Then he comes to Paris and refuses that. So, I mean, he wants to keep playing. I mean, he put a lot of effort into coming back from this big hip injury that he had. It's been a year rehabbing. He's got his young son, Rafael Jr., following around with his wife, Mary. His wife, Mary, seems to enjoy the circuit. I mean, he can keep going if he can be healthy. But I'm just not sure how much tolerance for pain he's going to have of losing to his big rivals like he did yesterday on his favorite surface and things like that. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he called it a day by the end of the fall here. But I think he's going to try to keep playing for the rest of the season.
It's kind of surprising. And you and I had spoken, going back to the French, that Novak was even able to play at Wimbledon and now in the Olympics. And we had talked about it then. At 38 years old, not sure how many more of these opportunities will come along. So how much would it matter to him to capture a gold medal?
Look, I'm just going to correct you. I mean, I never correct you, but he's 37.
Sorry, 37.
Just so
Thank
we
you.
Know, yeah, that's true for him. It matters more.
Oh, Rafa's
matters,
38, right? Rafa's 38.
No, absolutely. I can see why we're all getting. We don't even know anymore. These guys are just ancient. But yeah, but Novak, I thought Novak played in patches yesterday. Tremendous tennis. He was moving well, striking his the backhand especially, which is his canary in the coal mine shot. He was striking it so well, really dominating with that stroke. Serve looked pretty good. So, I mean, I think based on the, because of injuries and withdrawals, only five of the top 10 men came into this tournament. He has an excellent draw in the early part of the tournament now. He's going to play Dominic Kupfer in the third round tomorrow, which is the round of 16 at the Olympics, and you got to think Novak's a big favorite in that match. And he would play Baez or Tsitsipas in the quarterfinals. Both those guys are tough on clay. Tsitsipas played him in the final of the French Open a couple years ago. But Novak in this form, I think, is, you look at the guys who are in the draw, people like Casper Ruud, obviously Carlos Alcaraz, Alex Zverev. Those guys are the ones that are the danger zone. So, Zverev and Novak maybe in the semis would be a match that could knock him out. But he's looking very motivated. He's not playing anything else but singles here. No doubles this time for Serbia. All the energy at age 37 is going into this this last quest for a gold medal at the Olympics, which he doesn't have.
Yeah. Christopher Clary is with us from Paris as the Olympics are underway again now. It's just past 11 o'clock in the morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So Coco Gauff has a chance to compete now in these Olympics, where she didn't, obviously, when she's a teenager in Tokyo, ended up with COVID, so had to bow out. And it's so neat for her to be able to hold the flag, not so much lead the contingent, but hold the flag there on the boat. And now she's 3-0. It seems now at 20, I know the ripe old age of 20, that she comes in maybe more prepared for everything that, you know, happens with the attention on her and just the general pressure of an Olympic Games.
Yeah, one of my favorite moments of the Olympics so far was the moment when she heard about, you know, being able to carry the flag. I mean, it was legitimate shock. It was just great to see. She's with her teammates, or Chris Eubanks, who's known her since she was a little kid, was the one who's her teammate who told her about it in front of the whole team, and it was just great to see her reaction. And obviously, it wasn't your typical flag carrying experience on the boat through the rain in Paris, but I don't think she cared, and it was obviously really powerful for her to have that next to LeBron and everything. So she's kind of living the dream. She's always wanted to play at the Olympics. You know, her parents were basketball players and track and field athletes, so for them, the Olympics has always been a big deal in their family, and it's very meaningful to her, and you can tell she's very motivated, and, you know, she's got a shot. She's in three events. You know, she's playing on her own. She's playing with Jesse Pegula and the doubles. They've been one of the best teams in the world for a couple of years now, and she's playing with Taylor Fritz in the mix. So she's got a big schedule, but she's young and strong. She can do it. I don't think she's the favorite, though, honestly, in any of those events. So to get the gold, I think she's got a good shot at medals and perhaps all three for sure. But I think the gold, that's going to be tricky for her. But she's playing well, and she has a match today against Dana Vekic, who's a semifinalist at Wimbledon from Croatia just recently. And then she could play potentially Maria Sakkari or Marta Kostyuk of Ukraine in the quarterfinals. But I think Coco is a very good bet to get to the final here, and maybe she would probably face her bete noire, to use a French term, Iga Świątek, the top seed, who's in the other half of the draw.
I don't know whether or not you follow TikTok, but I know you're very informed. So Coco and some of her teammates put it out on TikTok that the bets were pretty rough at the Olympic Village, and apparently the entire team has moved to a hotel as opposed to staying there.
Yeah, those cardboard beds are great for the ecology, but not so great for the performance from what I'm hearing. Yeah. The athletes are sort of saying cardboard bed with a kind of wincing as they say it. So that might have been one bad move from the Paris organizers. I wasn't aware, honestly, that Coco and the guys had left. It would not be unprecedented, and it makes sense. You got a lot of matches to play. You want to do your best. If it's not working, it's not working. But she's enjoying it. You can tell she had like a Snoop Dogg pin with the five Olympic rings in a way I won't describe, that she was showing off here at the venue yesterday, and she's having a good time.
I was about to ask you, just to wrap up, how much have you seen Snoop Dogg at different tennis events?
Well, yesterday he was ubiquitous, but I mean, it was, I love the intergenerational Snoop Dogg and Billie Jean King side by side in the stands. That was a couple people from Long Beach, right? So it was great to see.
What's next for you after the Olympics, Chris?
Well, I'm actually going to watch more than tennis second week, Amy.
Nice.
That's my goal. I'm going to get out to the track and field, which I also have covered a lot of and love. And I'm working on my next book. I'm working on my book on Federer, the Master, which is still out. I'm doing a book on Nadal called The Warrior. It'll be out next year. And I'm working on my website, Tennis and Beyond, that I started, which has got a lot of tennis inside articles in it, and I've been really enjoying that. So my 30 years of the New York Times Daily Journalism, I thought I was sort of semi-retiring, but nope, I'm having fun doing all this.
Yeah, this is more fun, especially with the Olympics in Paris. But I just, and this is like triggered a thought, the last time I talked to you said you had to keep extending the deadline for the Nadal book because he wasn't done. So are you going to put it out there anyway, even though we're not sure?
You know, I'm not going to promise anything. That's exactly right. We've had to push it back because, you know, we thought Rafa was pretty much done, and he's coming back. And on clay, even though he got beaten yesterday, 1-4, you just can't count him out if he's, you know, fully locked and loaded. So we've been waiting a while. I think next year is the right time. I think there's a good chance he'll try to play the French Open again next year.
Oh, cool.
And maybe that be his farewell. But we'll see. It's all going to depend how the body holds up and sort of how the ego holds up, I think, over the next few months.
Well, we appreciate your time. As always, you can find Christopher Clary on Twix, is what I call it now, at Christoph Clary.
I like that.
C-L-A-R-E-Y. But he's got Tennis and Beyond, Substack. The Master is the Federer book. It's awesome. And The Warrior's coming out soon. So never a dull moment in his world. Great to catch up with you in Paris again. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of the games.
I hope you enjoy it too, Amy. Good to talk to you as always.
Thank you. Appreciate the time. Yeah, good stuff. And I knew that he would be a great ambassador, so to speak, as he says right off the top, since he is biased in favor of Paris because of his wife and his kids and just having lived so much of his life there. So great to talk to him, as I told you guys. If you listen to too many Christopher Clary conversations and interviews and read his stuff online, you become much smarter. So beware. You've been forewarned. Let's see. What are we going to do? From there, a little bit of this USA men's gymnastics team. Before the women completely dominate the headlines, it was such a cool moment for them on Monday. And also, we may have found a hockey player disguised as a baseball catcher. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on Facebook, online. You can find me at A-Law Radio. Good morning to you on a Tuesday here on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best, you can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
When your team eventually reaches the promised land, the pinnacle of your sport, then it's that much sweeter if you've had to suffer for it. Think about the great stories in sports. The Cubs.
The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout.
The Cavaliers.
And the impossible has come true.
How about Clemson knocking off Alabama?
Touchdown! With a second left.
We've had so many cool stories in the past 2 years in sports. Expect that your history will be redeemed.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Sitting in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name.
Somebody mentioned Hall of Fame. Well, on the horizon, Hall of Fame weekend for the pro football world, which means the Hall of Fame game that takes place now on a Thursday. It's a Thursday night prime time because we're such shills for football in this country. We'll even watch the very first preseason game in prime time, though it will have to compete against the Olympics. And even though it's tape delayed, which means you'll find out the results ahead of time, and no doubt it'll be all over the internet and social media. Thursday night is the women's all-around competition in gymnastics. So if you don't watch it live during the day, well, then your opportunity to watch it will come during prime time. It's called Paris in Primetime on NBC, and Mike Tirico does a great job. So that will go up against the preseason game that will take place. So yeah, it's kind of a big week for both the Olympics as well as for the NFL as they get back to their preseason football. And goodness, August 1st. Are you kidding me? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're hoping to connect with Christopher Clary very soon here on the Infinity Sports Network as he is covering tennis and the Olympic Games in Paris. And he's always been great when we've had him overseas. So at some point this hour, we will connect with him. But you can find me online at A-Law Radio as well as on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Without a doubt, my favorite moments of Monday at the Olympic Games, and I know the U.S. women, they crushed Japan and used their size and their strength inside, but without a doubt, the U.S. men's gymnastics team, so even as Simone Biles and the women are the superstars, they attract so much of the attention. The men ended a 16-year drought and were able to win bronze in the team competition, and it was glorious. Their crazy celebrations, their routines, and get to know the name Steven Nedorosic. He is the Carrie Strug of men's gymnastics in 2024. All right, we're excited to welcome Christopher Clary, who is in Paris there to cover the Olympic tennis. But I know, Christopher, you told me in the past that you love Paris. So how is it so far as a host site for the Olympics?
Hey, I'm a little bit biased, Amy. Good to hear your voice.
You too.
My wife is French. My kids are French American, so I'm kind of, I can't be an objective observer here. You know, I'm kind of got a little bit of a, I got a skin, some skin in the game. But no, it's, you know, the Paris vibe has really gotten good. I mean, it's was a tough, rainy start, as I'm sure a lot of you saw, you know, with the kind of the rainy opening ceremony and the tough weather. But it was still pretty phenomenal attempt to knock it out of the park, and I think in some ways they did. And so I think the vibe has been building in Paris since then. A lot of the streets in the city are quiet outside of the venues. You know, it's funny, you walk around, a lot of people from Paris have left. Some people were worried about, you know, just the problems of logistics during the Olympics, and people generally in Paris tend to go away in late July and August anyway. It gets pretty quiet in a lot of neighborhoods, but when you get near the venues, I'm telling you, the atmosphere is amazing. There's been a huge amount of enthusiasm, a lot of people coming across the border from within Europe to come watch the games, a lot of orange shirts from Dutch fans and different sports that I've seen. So I think it, as long as nothing, you know, unfortunately, you never know with an Olympics. As long as there's no major news event, like something, a terrorist attack, heaven forbid, but as long as that doesn't happen, I think this is going to be a big success, and you can really feel a lot of positive energy around the city and the event.
So I know you're there to cover tennis, but I have to ask, because I heard this as a report, that a lot of places where you look in Paris, there are signs or photos, maybe even life-size, of Léon Marchand, the swimmer, that he's a big star. And the atmosphere was incredible. Have you seen signs of him or his face anywhere?
You know, I mean, there's just wall-to-wall coverage in all the French media. And, and you know, the French are hard to please. But when it comes to, you know, cheering for their teams, once they get into it, then they really kind of abandon all that cynicism and they let it go. And then he's definitely one of the main people in the spotlight here. And there's a lot of focus, this being France, because they really are very good at some sports that in the U.S. are not that big. A lot of focus on stuff like judo or team handball or fencing, which is an amazing venue in the Grand Palais, which is this massive exposition building, which is so grand in the middle of Paris near the Champs-Élysées. I mean, this fencing, team handball, and judo in the U.S. would not, you know, get much coverage. But here in France, it's part of the mainstream coverage, and that's part of the joy of the Olympics, Amy, I think, is to see in these different countries, you know, what gets the focus.
I will tell you this. I've never seen a beach volleyball venue and a backdrop quite like the one they have, which is pretty incredible. If you know nothing about volleyball, but you see the Eiffel Tower rising up behind the sand, that in and of itself is a draw.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best venue at the Paris Olympics is probably about 12 time zones away. It's in Tahiti, if you're looking at some of the pictures of the surfing down there. But that's a tough commute from here. Definitely hard to get there on the metro. So we're going to stick with what we got. And that's the thing about Paris. If everything goes smoothly, the venues are unbeatable. As just the I'm sure you're seeing on TV with the visuals. But even live, I mean, you show up and I lived in Paris a lot of my adult life, and you drive in these places that are always pretty epic, down to see the Eiffel Tower, but suddenly there's a beach volleyball court, like you say, spotlit, and people are going to Versailles and seeing the horse jumping and the horse cross-country events. I mean, it's a great use of this beautiful city, and I wish them well. I hope it goes well for them. You just never know. The security is incredibly tight, a huge amount of force being deployed here, but it's always risky.
Christopher Clary is joining us from Paris, where it's just past 11 o'clock in the morning. He's the founder of Tennis and Beyond Substack, but longtime tennis insider and reporter. He's got a couple of books as well, and so we're always excited to have him here on the show. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So we get Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal in the Olympics, although a very familiar venue there at Roland Garros. How did that compare to maybe some of the other matches where you've covered them in Grand Slams?
That's a great question, I was curious because I wasn't. They played once before in the Olympics in Beijing when Nadal got the gold medal in singles back in 2008. But Djokovic wasn't Djokovic then. Rafa beat him in three sets, and that was their only previous Olympic match that they played. They haven't played much in Davis Cups. Almost all their matches have been individual sort of events like Grand Slams or regular ATP events. So this was a different venue, and I thought the. You could tell from the way they were approaching it, there was just huge hype, and it's a different community. You know, the Grand Slam tennis has its fans, people follow it. Once you get to the finals, there's more global interest. But this is interesting because this whole community of Olympic sports, within that community, the tennis players are superstars. They go around the village, and people like Djokovic and Nadal or Andy Murray are getting stopped all the time for selfies, and there's just a huge amount of interest in them. So in a way, you know, you could argue whether Olympic tennis really should even exist, considering there's other sports that maybe deserve more spotlight, and they don't have the same summit points that tennis has. But honestly, it feels pretty important once you see it here in this venue, and it does a lot for the sport. So this event with Djokovic and Nadal, and there's a big, big press area, Amy, up in the Roland Garros Stadium, which we've all sat in many times, literally could not get in half an hour before the match started. It was completely packed. All people coming from all over the Olympics, you know, a lot of other athletes, other federation officials, a lot of media that don't usually cover tennis were just jammed into this big, big press box. And I think it's because they knew it could be the last time. People knew no Nadal, no Djokovic. They wanted to see Nadal on clay if they'd ever had. They have it on their checklist. And honestly, you know, it wasn't a great match by their standards. Djokovic really dominated. Rafa made it interesting in the second set. It was it could have been, you know, almost embarrassing for him. It was 6-1, 4-love, two breaks for Djokovic. But then Nadal sort of saved the day a little bit for himself and fought back. But ultimately, it was really a pretty lopsided match by their standards, 6-1, 6-4 in about an hour and a half. But I'm not sure anybody was complaining. They were just happy to check that list and see those guys play.
And Nadal's not done. How cool is it to see he and Carlos Alcaraz competing in doubles?
Yeah, that's the other thing, Amy. You know, tennis doubles tends to be kind of back burner at almost every other event. But the Olympics, because, you know, gold medal's a gold medal.
Yes.
And the stars play. Yeah, it's almost the same thing as the singles in terms of the interest. So they're playing on the, when they play on the Chatrier court, the main court with the Nadal and Alcaraz, Nadalcaraz, if you want to call it that. The other night, I mean, it's 15,000 people. It was completely packed. It felt like it was a gold medal match, just huge atmosphere. So that's a lot of fun to see doubles, which is a really undervalued thing in my view in tennis, get its moment in the sunshine or the rain under the roof, whatever it's going to be. But, and they're playing again tonight. And the other thing is they also have Andy Murray's potentially last match is tonight.
Right.
They're playing back-to-back doubles on the second court at the at Roland Garros. Andy Murray with Dan Evans. I was on court a couple of days ago when Andy was playing what looked like his last match. He was had five match points against them in the last third set tiebreaker, and I was taking pictures on my phone of Andy's last point, but he kept making me delete him because, you know, he was five in a row. They say five match points, five career points in a row, and they live this to play another day. So they'll all be out there, not playing each other, but they're going to be out there today on the Longland court.
That atmosphere for Andy Murray and his roars, it was just unadulterated joy as they, as you talk about, they erased all those match points against the Japanese team and were able to stay alive. I mean, it seemed like, just watching it on TV, that the atmosphere was incredible. I can imagine it was awesome to be there.
You know, it's funny because most of the main court matches have been completely packed. That was the end of the day, so it's probably half full. But it was a bunch of Brits, so the Brits were just lighting it up and waving the Union Jack or, you know, waving their Scottish flags, too, and shouting out. And, it, you know, and honestly, I think Andy was just kind of lit from within. And so was Dan Evans, his partner. I think they hugged far too many times, but they hugged a lot. And it was great to see. And it was loud, despite being half full. And tonight will not be half full.
So I know that Andy Murray is done after this. He said that unequivocally. But Rafa seems to hedge a little bit. What's your sense after hearing from him post-match about his tennis future?
Yeah, great point, Amy. He's been kind of doing serial hedging for the last couple of months. he was they gave him a farewell ceremony in Madrid. Well, he's Spanish, obviously. He likes Madrid as a concept, but doesn't like playing tennis there because of the altitude and just a bunch of different things. So he said goodbye there, definitively. And then he went to Rome, and then he refused the idea of the ceremony, you know, the farewell thing. I go, Then he comes to Paris and refuses that. So, I mean, he wants to keep playing. I mean, he put a lot of effort into coming back from this big hip injury that he had. It's been a year rehabbing. He's got his young son, Rafael Jr., following around with his wife, Mary. His wife, Mary, seems to enjoy the circuit. I mean, he can keep going if he can be healthy. But I'm just not sure how much tolerance for pain he's going to have of losing to his big rivals like he did yesterday on his favorite surface and things like that. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he called it a day by the end of the fall here. But I think he's going to try to keep playing for the rest of the season.
It's kind of surprising. And you and I had spoken, going back to the French, that Novak was even able to play at Wimbledon and now in the Olympics. And we had talked about it then. At 38 years old, not sure how many more of these opportunities will come along. So how much would it matter to him to capture a gold medal?
Look, I'm just going to correct you. I mean, I never correct you, but he's 37.
Sorry, 37.
Just so
Thank
we
you.
Know, yeah, that's true for him, it matters more.
Oh, Rafa's
matters,
38, right? Rafa's 38.
No, absolutely. I can see why we're all getting, we don't even know anymore. These guys are just ancient. But yeah, but Novak, I thought Novak played in patches yesterday. Tremendous tennis. He was moving well, striking his the backhand especially, which is, you know, his canary in the coal mine shot. Striking it so well, really dominating with that stroke. Serve looked pretty good. So, I mean, I think based on the, because of injuries and withdrawals, only five of the top 10 men came into this tournament. He has an excellent draw in the early part of the tournament now. He's going to play Dominic Kupfer in the third round tomorrow, which is the round of 16 at the Olympics. And you got to think Novak's a big favorite in that match. And he would play Baez or Tsitsipas in the quarterfinals. Both those guys are tough on clay. Tsitsipas played him in the final of the French Open a couple years ago. But Novak in this form, I think, is, you know, you look at the guys who are in the draw, people like Casper Ruud, obviously Carlos Alcaraz, Alex Zverev. Those guys are the ones that are the danger zone. So, Zverev and Novak maybe in the semis would be a match that could knock him out. But he's looking very motivated. He's not playing anything else but singles here. No doubles this time for Serbia. All the energy at age 37 is going into this last quest for a gold medal at the Olympics, which he doesn't have.
Yeah. Christopher Clary is with us from Paris as the Olympics are underway again now. It's just past 11 o'clock in the morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So Coco Gauff has a chance to compete now in these Olympics, where she didn't, obviously, when she's a teenager in Tokyo, ended up with COVID, so had to bow out. And it's so neat for her to be able to hold the flag, not so much lead the contingent, but hold the flag there on the boat. And now she's 3-0. It seems... now at 20, I know the ripe old age of 20, that she comes in maybe more prepared for everything that happens with the attention on her and just the general pressure of an Olympic Games.
Yeah, one of my favorite moments of the Olympics so far was the moment when she heard about being able to carry the flag. I mean, it was legitimate shock. It was just great to see. She's with her teammates, or Chris Eubanks, who's known her since she was a little kid, was the one who was her teammate who told her about it in front of the whole team, and it was just great to see her reaction. And obviously it wasn't your typical flag-carrying experience on the boat through the rain in Paris, but I don't think she cared, and it was it was obviously really powerful for her to have that next to LeBron and everything. So she's kind of living the dream. She's always wanted to play at the Olympics. You know, her parents were basketball players and track and field athletes, so for them the Olympics has always been a big deal in their family, and it's very meaningful to her, and you can tell she's very motivated, and, you know, she's got a shot. She's in three events. You know, she's playing on her own. She's playing with Jessie Pegula in the doubles. They've been one of the best teams in the world for a couple of years now, and she's playing with Taylor Fritz in the mix. So she's got a big schedule, but she's young and strong. She can do it. I don't think she's the favorite, though, honestly, in any of those events. So to get the gold, I think she's got a good shot at medals and perhaps all three for sure. But I think the gold, that's going to be tricky for her, but she's playing well, and she has a match today against Dana Vekic, who's a semifinalist at Wimbledon from Croatia just recently. And then she could play potentially Maria Sakkari or Marta Kostyuk of Ukraine in the quarterfinals. But I think Coco is a very good bet to get to the final here, and maybe she would probably face her bete noire, to use a French term, Iga Świątek, the top seed, who's in the other half of the draw.
I don't know whether or not you follow TikTok, but I know you're very informed. So Coco and some of her teammates put it out on TikTok that the beds were pretty rough at the Olympic Village, and apparently the entire team has moved to a hotel as opposed to staying there.
Yeah, those cardboard beds are great for the ecology, but not so great for the performance from what I'm hearing. Yeah, the athletes are sort of saying cardboard bed with a kind of wincing as they say it. So that might have been one bad move from the Paris organizers. I wasn't aware, honestly, that Coco and the guys had left. It would not be unprecedented, and it makes sense. You got a lot of matches to play. You want to do your best. If it's not working, it's not working. But she's enjoying it. You can tell she had like a Snoop Dogg pin with the five Olympic rings in a way I won't describe, that she was showing off here at the venue yesterday, and she's having a good time.
I was about to ask you, just to wrap up, how much have you seen Snoop Dogg at different tennis events?
Well, yesterday he was ubiquitous, but I mean, it was, I love the intergenerational Snoop Dogg and Billie Jean King side by side in the stands. That was a couple people from Long Beach, right? So it was great to see.
What's next for you after the Olympics, Chris?
Well, I'm actually going to watch more than tennis second week, Amy.
Nice.
That's my goal. I'm going to get out to the track and field, which I also have covered a lot of and love. And I'm working on my next book. I'm working on my book on Federer, The Master, which is still out. I'm doing a book on Nadal called The Warrior. It'll be out next year. And I'm working on my website, Tennis and Beyond, that I started as, which has got a lot of tennis inside articles in it, and I've been really enjoying that. So my 30 years of the New York Times Daily Journalism, I thought I was sort of semi-retiring, but nope, I'm having fun doing all this.
Yeah, this is more fun, especially with the Olympics in Paris. But I just, and this is like triggered a thought, the last time I talked to you said you had to keep extending the deadline for the Nadal book because he wasn't done. So are you going to put it out there anyway, even though we're not sure?
You know, I'm not going to promise anything. That's exactly right. We've had to push it back because, you know, we thought Rafa was pretty much done, and he's coming back. And on clay, even though he got beaten yesterday, 1-4, you just can't count him out if he's, you know, fully locked and loaded. So we've been waiting a while. I think next year is the right time. I think there's a good chance he'll try to play the French Open again next year.
Oh, cool.
And maybe that'd be his farewell. But we'll see. It's all going to depend how the body holds up and how the ego holds up, I think, over the next few months.
Well, we appreciate your time. As always, you can find Christopher Clary on Twix, is what I call it now, at Christoph Clary.
I like that.
C-L-A-R-E-Y. But he's got Tennis and Beyond, Substack. The Master is the Federer book. It's awesome. And The Warrior is coming out soon. So never a dull moment in his world. Great to catch up with you in Paris again. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of the games.
I hope you enjoy it too, Amy. Good to talk to you as always.
Thank you. Appreciate the time. Yeah, good stuff. And I knew that he would be a great ambassador, so to speak, as he says right off the top, since he is biased in favor of Petty because of his wife and his kids and just having lived so much of his life there. So great to talk to him. As I told you guys, if you listen to too many Christopher Clary conversations and interviews and read his stuff online, you become much smarter. So beware. You've been forewarned. Let's see, what are we going to do? From there, a little bit of this USA men's gymnastics team. Before the women completely dominate the headlines, it was such a cool moment for them on Monday. And also, we may have found a hockey player disguised as a baseball catcher. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on Facebook. Online, you can find me at A-Law Radio. Good morning to you on a Tuesday here on the Infinity Sports Network.